It is the 2024 Maximum Fun Drive. In fact, Bria, it's almost over. It's almost not the fun drive anymore.
It ends after tomorrow. Tomorrow's the last day of the fun drive. It's been a really fun one. We've had all sorts of stuff we've done. We had a Glasser-only event where we played Glasser Feud.
Oh, so much
we
fun.
We read an erotica book about minotaurs. Mallory lifted books. Mm-hmm. It's been a really fun drive. And so we just want to thank everyone who's already given, already joined, already boosted. We really appreciate it.
But it means that you don't have that much more time to join in all those wonderful Glassers. And what's the Maximum Fun Drive? It is the best time of year to sign up to become a member of our network, Maximum Fun. You get to help us make the show every week, and you get access to all kinds of stuff. Some of the stuff we just talked about. You get hours and hours of bonus episodes. You get an invitation to our Slack channel. You get an invite to our members-only Zoom parties and events, like that members-only Glasser Feud party. So much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Just to name a few. So stay tuned to hear about the goals we've already hit and the stuff we still want to do. Go to MaximumFun.org/join to join or upgrade. That's MaximumFun.org/join. Join. You're listening to Reading Glasses, a show about book culture and literary life designed to help you read better. I'm author and book devourer Mallory O'Mara.
And I'm Bria Grant, filmmaker and e-reader. This episode, it's the second week of the Maximum Fun Drive, and we are recommending books to you in every genre. Like, so if you're like, I really wanted to try, you know, whatever, some insert genre here, we're going to insert the genre and we're going to insert the book. We're going to tell you everything.
I'm not going to make a single joke.
Plus, we're going to solve a problem about when to buy a book.
But first, Bria, what are you reading?
I'm reading a book somebody gave me. It is a couple of years old. It's called Desert Creatures by Kay Chronister. Chronister?
Oh, this is from Erewhon. I gave you this book. It's an Erewhon book, right?
You gave me this book. Someone else also gave me this book.
Oh, that's so funny. It's got like a maroon cover.
Yep. I'm looking at it right now. So I'm only a little ways in, but basically it's about a young girl and her father who are... It's a post-apocalyptic landscape. It's a desert. If you're like in Dune, maybe this is the book for you. It's a desert. And everything in the desert can get this sort of like desert disease. And
just all of a sudden get real sandy.
You get, like if you like start becoming like a cactus kind of thing where you start to like, your skin starts changing. You start becoming a desert plant.
What?
I know, isn't that wild? And so this young girl and her father, they're trying to make it somewhere, but they can't quite make it. And the daughter gets sick. And so they stop at this place. They stop at this like place where there's a commune sort of place, but there's strange rules. And we're hearing it all from the little girl's perspective. And we don't really know, but it seems like there's not safe things happening at this culty commune-y kind of
place. Yeah, you find a commune in the middle of a desert, nothing good is happening there.
It is not good.
Everyone's wearing the same color.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how far I am. I haven't gotten very far into this book, but that's weird that you and someone else gave this to me.
So it was sent to us.
Oh, it was sent to us. Someone gave it to me, like a friend gave it to me, gave me a hard copy as well. So I have two copies of this book, I guess. Who knew? I've been reading it. And so far, it is pretty spooky.
Ooh.
Yeah. What are you reading?
I am reading, I think it's the third book in the Shady Hollow trilogy. Folks, you know how much I fucking love this series.
Me,
it's the third one. This is like every time I go through, I had gone through a group of books there. I was like, this is just fine. And when I know that I need a win, I pull out the next Shady Hollow book. There's four out and there's a fifth one coming out this year. So I'm trying to catch up so I can read the fifth one when it comes out. It's called Mirror Lake. It's by Juno Black. And it's the third in a series, so I won't spoil too much. But this is their, like, a lot of the books in the series, they always have like some kind of seasonal element. And this is taking place in autumn. The series opens up with this autumn festival and a rat has been murdered. Or has he? The lady rat came home to her husband and is claiming that that rat is not her husband.
Oh.
That her husband has been murdered and this is an imposter.
Uh-oh.
But he looks exactly like the rat, and everyone's like, oh, well, this lady rat's kind of weird anyway. Maybe she's like going through some sort of mental break, and the rat is like, yeah, that's my wife. Like something's going on, but no, I'm really him. But the main character of the series, Vera Vixen, who is the intrepid Fox reporter of Shady Hollow, she smells that something is a little wrong with this. Mm-hmm. And there's an election going on in the background. And there's also like a whole thing that happens where there's an author event in town at the bookstore called Nevermore Books, owned by a raven. And like, it's just so, I just love being in this world. This series reminded me, because if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know I stopped reading series for a really long time, and I got back into them within the past year or so. And while I was reading this book, I was like, oh yeah, that's what's nice about reading a series. It's like this place you like to go to. Like the main character's walking around town, and I'm like, oh yeah, I know. I remember all the stuff. Like I know all these all the members. I know Joe the Moose, who owns the coffee shop. And like, it feels so lovely to return to a world that you are familiar with and you love. And that's what this series is for me. I love it so much. I really, really, really encourage you to, if you are interested in cozy mysteries at all, if you like woodland creatures, want something nice and comforting, check out the Shady Hollow series. This is Mirrored Lake by Juno Black.
And I'm reading Desert Creatures by Kay Cronister.
So we want to take a moment to share some listener feedback. Folks, we got more book organization feedback. And I have to tell you, we got so many emails from people who don't organize their books that it's going to be impossible for me to ever include all of them. So this group of feedback is from people who do have an organizational system and wanted to tell us about it. Kitty wrote in to say, I felt compelled to write in because with the poll options given, I would definitely answer no organization system, even though that isn't the case. My books are organized by vibes, and the vibes are very specific. Every time I buy a new book, it takes me forever to redo everything, so the vibes are still correct.
Oh my God.
I'm so obsessed with this.
This is very funny.
This is also why, even though I'm subscribed to some fancy book boxes, if I don't absolutely love a book, I resell it. Space is at a premium, and reorganizing to get the vibes right is a pain.
Yeah, listen, you're going to put that non-vibey book in with some of the books that have other vibes. You can't do it.
I totally understand. Like, I had to trim this email. Kitty had written a big explanation of like some books that were next to each other, but I totally get that.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's kind of how my weird fiction section is, because I'm like, oh, well, Kelly Lincoln, Helen Oyeyemi, like, of course they're going to go next to each other. Like, same vibes.
Of course, they have the same vibes. I agree.
I love this.
Wow. Kristen Rodin said, after listening to your book organization episode, I wanted to write in and share that I'm a hybrid organizer and one of the rare size organizers. I currently have 3 large bookshelves specifically for my hardcovers, which are further sorted alphabetically by author. Then I have 2 half bookshelves of manga sorted by title, 1 half bookshelf of trade paperbacks sorted by author, and 1 half bookshelf of mass market paperbacks also sorted by author, and then 1 half bookshelf of nonfiction sorted by subject. This is where giant coffee table books and other randomly sized books go. Okay, wait. So basically, just to make this clear,
all sizes of print.
This is all sizes of print, and this organizes by size of the print. Okay.
Yes.
Additionally, I'm an avid collector of exclusive editions and have a revolving selection of pretty books that I'll display on top of my shelves to show off the sprayed edges or stenciled designs on the pages. Ooh.
This
also serves to give
me
some flexibility on my shelves and gives room for new books before I have to cave and get another bookshelf. I have a half bookshelf that I call my WOW.
World of Warcraft.
That's what I thought. World of Warcraft Shrine, where I keep all of my Warcraft novels, manga, companion books, as well as my collector's edition boxes, along with my plushies and figures. I thought Mallory would find this interesting.
I do. I love World of Warcraft. And I have several World of Warcraft books. Friend of the show, Madeline Rue, wrote one of them.
So this is just organized by size.
Yes.
It's just size. And then within the size, it's by author or subject, basically.
Or title.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Kristen, this is a complicated system when you described it, but I'm sure if I saw it, I'd be like,
I'm sure it's very aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure I would be like, hey, of course, that mass market goes with mass market, yeah. You know, whatever. That totally makes sense.
I love this.
Yeah.
This, like, when someone said, when we first were like, oh, people organized by size, I'm like, oh, yeah. But like, the way that Kristen's explaining it, I'm like, oh, that must be very pleasing to look at.
Yeah.
I totally get it. And then mm-hmm. Kristen says, thanks for being amazing. I've been listening to your show since almost the beginning, and I absolutely love hearing about all the new books and book tech, and generally just enjoy being part of an amazing community of bookish friends. P.S. My wheelhouse is an ongoing work in progress, but for now I have dragons, elves, or fae, vampires, honestly, any humanoid race with pointy ears and or teeth, fantasy with unique magic systems, retellings with a twist, workplace enemies to lovers, high fantasy with equal parts plot and character, Regency romance, main characters with trauma or mental illness that they work through as a side plot, and the who did this to you trope.
Who did this to you? I like that too. That's fun.
I love this. Mm-hmm. This is a wheelhouse of someone who knows themselves really well as a reader.
Mm-hmm,
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can email us at readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. If you want a list of all the books we talk about on the show delivered to your inbox every month, you can sign up for our newsletter. There's a link in the show notes. And before we recommend books to get you into every single big genre, we're going to take a quick break. It is the 2024 Maximum Fun Drive. And Bria, it's almost over.
It's almost over. So sad. We've had a really fun time. Mm-hmm. We've been hanging out with Glassers.
Would you say we had maximum fun?
I would say we had maximum, the maximum amount of fun that you could possibly have. Hey, but let's talk about all the amazing stuff our new supporters have already unlocked. We made a bunch of goals. Maximum Fun has a bunch of goals, but we're going to talk about our goals. But wait, Mallory, first, what does it mean to be a Maximum Fun supporter?
Besides being really cool and sexy?
Yeah, yeah, that's part of it.
Maximum Fun is our podcast network, and it's just like a Patreon, except that it's a co-op. Mm-hmm. Which means it's even better. You sign up to support us every month, and that money goes to help us make reading glasses every single week, and also to our network, which is a co-op, again, which means that every single cent of that $5, $10, $20 supports real people making the podcast that you love.
Yeah, and Reading Glasses comes out every single week, and we
every
pour
single week.
So much time and effort into this show. We want to thank all of our Max Fund members, which, again, that's like Patreon for us, as are our patrons. They're, because of y'all, we're able to pay our bills. We're able to keep those hot book recs coming. We're able to keep making this show.
It's listeners like you that make Reading Glasses possible. So, Bria, what have those wonderful listeners unlocked so far?
Y'all have really come through, and we really appreciate it. First of all, we are going to do another readathon, which mm-hmm. we had a great time with last year. We also read Morning Glory Milking Farm by C.M. Nacosta. wow, that was the... You want to do that?
I guess... It's probably more appropriate for an erotica read.
If you didn't get to see us talk about that, that is on our Instagram. Mm-hmm. You can see us talk about that live. We also unlocked a bookshelf tour, which we also did this week.
Which is also on our Instagram.
Yeah. We also, Mallory and I, will be reading Fourth Wing.
We will.
I haven't started yet.
I have not either.
Okay. We will be doing it. Also, we unlocked themed quarterly online meetups for members only. So if you join today, you can join these themed quarterly online meetups. The first one is a book recommendation party. You can bring recommendations. We'll do recommendations. It's going to be really fun. And we also unlocked something we really were wanting.
Horny fairies. Horny fairies. Horny fairy book club.
The Horny Fairy Book Club. We're so excited about that. We are thrilled that we're going to be doing... Are we thrilled? We're very excited to be doing a Horny Fairy Book Club.
Yeah, we're going to get input from the Glassers and our Slack channel and our members to see which Horny Fairy book you want us to read. And then we're going to have a members-only Zoom about it. Mm-hmm. So if you want to talk Horny Fairies with us... Now's your chance.
We also really want to unlock our anticipated books episodes. So we were doing these where we put them into the members only feed. We want to put these in our main feed. So help us get there.
Bria and I spent some time and put together all the books that we think that ourselves and you as a Glasser are going to be excited about in the next coming season. We make a massive list of all the books that are coming out, plus all the wheelhouses. And then we pick our favorites off that list, the ones we're most excited about. It is going to explode your TBRs, but it also means that you get to be pre-ordering these books first in line at the library. They're so much fun to do. And for the past year, they've been for members only, but we want to bring them into the light of day. Mm-hmm. We want to bring them to the people.
But what we really want to do is get to 700. We want to get the Los Angeles reading party.
We're going to have an in-person reading party. Have you ever wanted to have a reading party with a bunch of other Glassers and me and Bria? This is what's going to happen. It's going to be so much fun. We're going to hang out. We're all going to read together for a while. We're going to talk about books. Bria's probably going to be eating some chocolate. Mm-hmm. In-person reading party. It's going to be a blast, but we can only do that if we get to 700 new boosting or upgrading members. So that means that if you already have a Maximum Fun membership and you want to help us get towards these goals, you can boost by a dollar or upgrade to the next tier, and that counts. Folks, you can join as a brand new member. Maybe you've been listening to the show for a while and we have helped you by giving you a book recommendation or taking away some of your book guilt or just improved your reading life. Now is the best time to say thank you, Mallory and Bria. For just $5, you can help us make the show, help us reach these goals, and get all kinds of stuff. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. MaximumFun.org/join to sign up. Plus, Bria, the Maximum Fun Drive is almost over, but the fun is not.
No, tonight we're doing a bookish trivia Zoom hosted by yours truly, Bria Grant, put together a trivia night, 6 p.m. PST. It's Mallory versus other Max Fun hosts.
It's just me. I am my own
Mallory.
Team.
If you tuned into the last one, you know Mallory did not need me. So I decided I'm hosting. And if you're a Glasser, I think you'll have a lot of fun with it. So please join us tonight. If you are not in the Slack, just email us for that Zoom link.
But Bria, speaking of fun in-person stuff, what are we doing tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, Friday the 29th, we are going to be at the Elysian Theater in Los Angeles. It's the live Max Fun wrap-up show for the Fun Drive. Mallory and I are starting it off. We're doing a deep dive starting at 5 p.m. Is that early in the night for us to investigate horny fairies? We don't think so.
We don't think so because we go to bed early.
We're going to bed right afterwards. So we're excited. So join us at the Elysian Theater, 5 p.m. on Friday.
It is free. It's totally free. Bria and I are going to put on our X-File hats and flashlights and whatever else we need.
I truly have a special hat for this.
We are going to get to the bottom of why people are so horny for fairies. You don't want to miss this. It's a free, fun event. It's going to be so much fun. Link in the show notes. Again, that's Friday, March 29th, tomorrow from when this episode drops at 5 p.m.
We are so grateful to our supporters. They mean the world to us. I mean, we're biased, but I think we really do have the best bookish community. Y'all are so supportive and nice. Please join us in becoming one of these people. If you want to join, you have to go to MaximumFun.org/join. That's MaximumFun.org/join. And we only hit these goals that we're talking about during the fun drive. We're only going to do the live reader event. We're only going to do the anticipated books episode. These all only happen during this time. So help us get there. Thank you so much. We can't tell you how much we appreciate you.
Glasses. This week, we got another special Maximum Fun Drive episode. We are recommending books to get you into every genre. We often get requests for recommendations like this, so we're doing one mega episode that will be your entry point into every major book genre you've been curious about.
Like, it's a gateway book, right?
Yes,
it's a gateway book.
It's like a gateway book.
This is a book,
that someone with a trench coat has on in an alleyway, and it's like, hey, kid.
Hey, you've always wanted to try horror? Here you go. No. Like, it's a book that maybe...
First one's free.
It's not going to be, like, the deepest cut, you know?
No.
But it's going to be one that, like, maybe if you were into other stuff, it can be... It will open you to this genre.
Yes. And so this is just the major genres. Obviously, there's many, many subgenres, but these are the main ones, especially the ones we talk about on this show frequently.
Great.
So the first category, me and Bria's favorite, horror.
Mm-hmm.
Very near and dear to our heart. What do you think is your, like, recommended entry point gateway horror book?
Okay. I'm choosing Lone Women by Victor Lavalle.
It's a good one.
Because... I think it's literary fiction. So if you are already a person who's reading literary fiction, if you're already reading Westerns, it also is a Western. I think that it would open a door for you in that way. So you already are familiar with these genres. I think that this is just a tick into the horror box. Like, it is scary.
It's a little toe in the pond.
It does have a scary box. It's funny I said that. It has a scary box involved.
You're right.
Yeah. So it is a tick in the horror
literally
box.
Scary.
And so I think, and it's historical. So if you're also into historical stuff, I think this is just like, it is both deeply entrenched in the horror genre, but it's also a bit of an outlier because it has these other genres that it's really pulling from. I mean, pulling from the historical fiction, I mean, in a deep way. So while it's not like, you know, a straight up haunted house book or something, I think this is a good gateway one where you're like, I read a horror book. It's called Lone Women. It was scary. It is a scary book with a big ending that I think could be really great for people.
And it was very buzzy. That's like
it was
the
buzzy.
Sweet spot. It's like it was super buzzy last year, but it's not buzzy now. So you can read it knowing that a lot of people liked it without feeling that pressure of like, oh, everyone's talking about this book. Right.
It's not a TV show yet, yes. Which one of his other books is, The Changeling is, which I think is always kind of hard sometimes to go backwards once that happens. But what do you got for horror?
I am recommending what I think of as the diner of horror books.
I love this idea.
It's The Twisted Ones by T. Kingfisher. This is your solid, like, you cannot go wrong with T. Kingfisher in general. But The Twisted Ones, it's like, it's not anything fancy. It's not super long. It's not doing anything super ridiculous or over the top or complicated. It is a very straightforward, again, it's like going to a diner. You know what you're going to get, and it's hopefully going to be fucking good. And The Twisted Ones is excellent. 5-star book for me. It is spooky. It is also a little bit funny. That's what one of the reasons I recommended this is, like, the main character is really relatable. She's really funny. You know that the dog does not die at the end.
That's right. Starts with you. It's the first sentence of the book, isn't it?
Yes. So it's like, it's horror, but it's also kind of making sure that you're going to be, it's horror that cares about you. It's like, all right, I know this is a scary book, but this dog doesn't die. And we're going to throw in some humor to break this up. It's a super compelling, fun, engaging read. And it is scary. I really wanted to pick a scary book because a lot of people are like, well, I'm interested in horror, but I don't want to be scared. And I'm like, you probably don't want to read horror then. Because, like, the entire point of this genre is to be scared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if we're, I know that you and I really love horror and we talk about it a lot and people, like, get excited about our enthusiasm. But if you really don't want to be scared or don't want to be at risk of being scared, you can cherry pick certain books here and there, but this is probably not going to be the genre for you. So both of these books are pretty scary. Twisted Ones is really scary, especially for me because I read it in the middle of the woods because I'm not a smart
and
person.
And it is a woods heavy book.
But this will give you a taste. Like, if this is something that you're into and you're enjoying and you're having fun being scared, yes, this is a perfect gateway book for you. Next genre is another one that's near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, science fiction. Mallory, what did you choose for this?
I picked The Marrow Thieves by Cherie DeMaline, an author that we both really love. And The Marrow Thieves is great because it's like very much a sci-fi book. It's like a future world where like climate change has destroyed the earth and people can't, the only people who can dream are the native and indigenous populations of the earth. But it's also a YA book. So if you're interested in sci-fi, but you're like, is sci-fi going to be really complicated? Is there going to be a lot of world building that I need to learn? Marrow Thieves is not like that. It's very thrilling. It's very compelling. It moves really fast. But it also, like, again, it's like squarely sci-fi. The characters are great. And I just think that if you read this and you're like, oh, I kind of like this imagining of a future that's different and like what technologies would be and like how people would live in that. I almost recommended Station 11, but I wanted to do Marrow Thieves because I love that book so much. And I just think it's like a really solid like entry gateway to the world of sci-fi. What did you think? Oh, I actually wondered if you were going
to
pick this.
Listen, sci-fi can mean so many things, right? It can be a space opera. It can be a future. It can be whatever. So, but I went with one that I thought was very accessible, which is Starter Villain by John Scalzi. It's the newest John Scalzi, who's a big science fiction writer. But you don't have to learn anything. All you need to, in fact, what's great is that you're entering the world with the main character who's discovering that, oh, there's this world of like kind of underground science fiction-y sort of villains, and I am having to join them. You know, I'm joining this group of people. And there's science fiction-y things happening. There are, you know, cats running the world and things like that. So it's very, it has like this fun stuff, but the world building isn't so huge that it's going to feel inaccessible and you don't have to go to outer space. It's right here. You're going to understand everything, but it has like a fun science fiction element to it. And John Scalzi, I think, is also very funny. So it's very accessible. It's not dry, which science fiction can have that reputation. I don't think that reputation's true, but
I think people perceive complication as dry.
Yeah, whereas this is a very accessible, like easy, fun book that is also kind of fun.
With one of the best covers.
Great cover.
Of recent years.
Wonderful cover.
All right, next up, fantasy, a genre that I used to read a lot of and then went without for a really long time and I'm now back into in a big way.
Great.
Bria, what do you think is a great gateway fantasy book?
Again, I mean, my sci-fi and fantasy kind of cross each other in some ways. Like, I feel like most of the stuff I read would be called, like, speculative fiction.
Yeah.
But this one, as popular as dragons and fairies and things are, and I'm reading those books, I'm not reading them as much. I wanted to give someone who wasn't given a non-fairy book. I almost did Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies. Like, I was like trying to think of
ones. We've talked about that so much. I think you picked a good one.
So I'm going to an old school one, which is American Gods by Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman obviously is a great fantasy author who writes all sorts of wonderful fantasy stuff that we all really appreciate. American Gods has been made into a show, but I think this book is also, again, very accessible. You don't have to know much. You just have to know that these gods are living among us. You have to understand our world and know, which you already live in, so you know that one.
Aliens like, crap!
And the gods are, like, from all different cultures, and it's, like, also, like, one god represents money. And, like, you know, it's a really great way of, like, looking at fantasy, like, in our own world. And also, of course, the world is, you know, about to, there's going to be a big battle and all sorts of fun fantasy stuff like that. What do you have?
I picked a big Glasser book, and a book that you and I both really loved.
Yeah, this is great.
It's The Cartographers by Pong Shepard. And I think this is a great gateway fantasy book for the same reason. It's like, it's not high fantasy. You know, there's no family trees. There's no houses to memorize. But there is magic. There's a magical place. But it is also very realistic. And I think it is great for gateway fantasy because it takes place in a library. There's a lot of bookish stuff. The main character is a cartographer. And she's trying to solve this mystery of this map that her father had made that people thought was missing. And now she has come into possession of. And she doesn't realize the power of this map. And other people want it. And there's all this stuff behind it. So it has some other elements where it's like, very thrill. It's like compelling and thrilling, a little bit literary. But it's
also, if you've never read fantasy books, fantasy people love maps. Oh, like, you should know maps are a big part of it. So this is a great way for you to just understand that part of it.
I got a book recently and I opened it up and the map was like a hand-drawn map from the author in pencil.
Wow.
Like, it was photo. It was, it wasn't like.
That author was like exhausted by the end.
Drawing all of them individually. Cool. But yeah, so this book, you know, there, again, there's magic elements. There's a special magical place, but it's still very grounded in this world. And I think this is a great book to read if you're like, oh, well, I don't know if I would like fantastical elements of a book. This book will show you that maybe you like it. Mm-hmm. What's our next one?
Romance, which mm-hmm. we know a lot of people are trying to get into. A lot of people are scared to get into. What do you have for someone who wants to get into romance?
This was very hard for me to pick because I have also been on a big journey and have read. Romance has exploded for me over the past year. And I chose a book that I really loved from last year. It's called Ruby Spencer's Whiskey Year by Rochelle Billow. And it's about this woman, and she has taken a year off. She's quit her crappy job in New York, her stressful job, and she wants to write a cookbook. And she goes to Scotland for a year. She rents this little cottage.
Living the dream.
Right? And I picked this book, and of course, like, there's a sexy Scottish man who lives in the village, but I picked this because one of the things that people really love about romance, and something that I really love about romance besides the smut, is that a lot of these stories are about women finding themselves mm-hmm. and like changing careers and becoming independent, leaving bad situations and like taking life into their own hands. And I think that's something that people really love about romance. It's not just the sex. It's not just the romance element. It's the centering of a woman's story. And a lot of these books are like that. It's mm-hmm. some sort of transitional period for the main character. A lot of there are obviously lots of romances with a male lead, but this is a female lead. And it's just so nice to like you said, like your immediate reaction was like, what a dream. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of escapism in romance, and a lot of it has nothing to do with boning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or boners. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's just like it's the frosting on the boner cake. Uh-huh. What did you pick?
I went Emily Henry. I went Book Lovers by Emily Henry because I think Emily Henry is very accessible. Very like, when I think of romance, I think it's something that is accessible. It's something that I can pick up. I can like, oh, wow, this is like, okay, I get it. It's a woman. This is a woman. She's going to a small town and she's like trying to like get away. She realizes that like she's this kind of like person who would be the bad guy in a romance story. And she goes to this small town and then she meets this small town guy and she's like, what am I doing? Am I a cliche? And I think like the awareness of the romance genre would be helpful for someone trying to get into it. Because I think that sometimes it's those cliches that might turn people off. Mm-hmm. But this one acknowledges
the
cliches.
But you love a meta book.
And I love a meta book. And leans into the cliches. And it's like, I know these are cliches. I know. Because this person is a book publisher. She knows. But she still is falling for the cliches. And there's something like really adorable about that.
I
think if you're worried about romance, this book will acknowledge that like, yeah, there are some silly cliches. But maybe these tropes
are still
fun.
There's still some life in those tropes.
Yeah.
All right. What is our next?
Thriller and mystery. Thriller and mystery. So if you're a person who's like always wondered what it's like to be thrilled.
What it's like to be scared for your life. No, I think it's a really popular genre. And I think just like romance, mystery and thrillers especially gets kind of a bad rap because it's like, oh, it's just a beach read. You know, it's mm-hmm. books that are on the store in a grocery, you know, or books that are on the shelf in a grocery store. But thrillers and mysteries are some of the best books out there. And if you've always been interested and not sure where to start, we got you. Bria, what did you pick?
I picked a new one. I think any Jesse Q Sutanto could be good.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go Vera Wang's Unsolicited Guide for Murderers. This is much more of a mystery. The crime happens at the very beginning in this tea shop that this woman owns, Vera Wang owns. And it's just this woman trying to figure out what happened, but also meddling in people's business. And that is so funny to me. Again, it's a funny one. This is a much lighter one. It's not a thriller. You're not super concerned for her life. So if you don't want one that is scary, I think this is much more just about you are concerned about her relationships and about like what's happening with the people around her, but it's less about the actual murder. It's more her just trying to figure out how it happened mm-hmm. or what happened. What do you have for this?
I'm glad you picked that because I definitely went the thriller.
Oh, good.
You might be afraid for someone's life category. Okay. This is a author that we both love also. 5-star banger of a book. It's The Cutting Season by Attica Locke. And this was my first Attica lock, and it just blew me out of the water. It's like this really amazing, super compelling thriller with like multiple timelines about this woman. She works on a plantation in the South that's like been turned into an event venue. She has a lot of mixed feelings about it, especially because she's Black. And her mother used to work there. And one day while they're doing construction, they find bodies buried out in this like field. And but they're not like historical bodies. They are pretty recent corpses. So like quite literally there's secrets being unearthed. So she's trying to untangle her feelings about working at this place, but also untangling this mystery of like who these women are, how do they got murdered. Attica Locke is just like such a solid, there's not a wasted chapter. There's no like just a lean, mean thriller machine Attica Locke is. And this is just such a, if you were interested in thrillers, this is a perfect one for you to start. All right, we're going to get into more genres, but we're going to take a quick break first. You can send your thoughts on these books to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. Hey, Glassers. You, the person listening to this. Have you been listening to the show for a while? Have we helped your reading life? Maybe given you lots of book recommendations? Right now, you can unlock even more reading glasses for just $5. Bria, what do they get if they sign up to support us at $5 a month?
An invite to the Slack channel. Boom. Zoom parties. Boom. BOCO. This year, we did an episode on the bookish TV shows from the 90s and 80s.
And people are loving it.
Yeah. Yeah. But we've done bonus episodes for, we've been around for 7 years. We've done 7 years worth of bonus episodes. Mm-hmm. There are bonus episodes about the best and worst book adaptations, our favorite comfort reads, so many anticipated books episodes from last year, tons of specific recommendation episodes. So just for $5 a month, you get hours and hours of extra reading glasses. So if you like the show and you want more reading glasses, go to MaximumFun.org/join. That's MaximumFun.org/join.
And folks, the Maximum Fun Drive is almost over.
Oh my God. It ends tomorrow.
Maybe you listen to last week's episode and you're like, I'll just sign up whenever. No, you have like 24 hours. It's tomorrow. Tomorrow is the end. If we've helped your reading life, we are asking for some help from you. We really want to reach our goals and keep the show going. Reading Glasses comes out every single week, which means that it's a full-time job for us. We write these episodes, record them, produce them, edit them, and promote the show all in-house here, all in library. It's a lot of work, and our Maximum Fun supporters make that possible. So for just $5, you get to keep those book racks flowing and get so much extra bookishness. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. MaximumFun.org/join. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We know that you could spend that $5 on books. So we appreciate it so much if you've taken a minute to support us. Glasses. Okay, we are back with more books to get you into every genre. First one, historical fiction. I debated about whether or not this was too like subgenre-y, but it's become like historical fiction is so huge that I felt like it really deserved its own spot. So what do you think? What the historical fiction people should start with?
I mean, you're right. There's so many really good historical fiction, and it's hard because
it could be in ancient Greece or 1990s.
I know, I don't know if there's like different words for different kinds of historical fiction. I picked one that spans a very long period of time. It's Homegoing by Yael Jesse, which came out, I read it a while ago, but I still think about this book all the time, but it spans a long amount of time. I can't figure out how long it is right now. I'm trying to figure it out, but it starts in Ghana. And it's about these two women, these two sisters, and they get separated in this very specific way at the time. Basically, one ends up marrying this guy who is a governor there, and then one ends up being held captive in the same sort of castle that her sister just married. And then it follows all the generations after them and how those two events affected every single generation following them. All the way up until, I was trying to figure out when the most recent one is. I mean, it is very recent. So it is like, it spans, you know, a very long period of time. So it's both historical, but then gets into much more modern day in a really interesting way. And each chapter follows each sister over that period of time. So you get to see it span. And I think it's a really great way, like, look, if you're interested in recent history, but also history, like, no, this one is not ancient. But it does span a long period of time. So this could be a good one if you are interested in various times of history.
Yeah, it's like a buffet of historical fiction.
Exactly. What about you? What do you got?
I also went the same route I went with the cartographers and like hoping to lure people into historical fiction by bookishness. And I picked The Lions of Fifth Avenue by Fiona Davis.
Cute, yeah.
Book I really loved. And this is a twin timelines, and both timelines are historical. One timeline is 1913 and one timeline is 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And in both of them, the main characters are women. This one woman in 1913, her husband has just been hired by the New York Public Library, and they live there. They live in this apartment inside the library because he's like the, not the, the janitor, but he's like the, he like runs the maintenance team. She's a wife, she's a mother, and but, you know, living in the library, she starts reading and, like, getting really into, like, the world of intellect and is starting to question her role of, like, in this family. And what happens is these books are stolen from the library, and it kind of upends a lot of things. And then in 1993, it's a very similar story. It's this student, or her, she's kind of struggling because her grandmother was a very, very famous writer, and she is trying to, like, untangle her life from the expectations of her family. And she is working at the New York Public Library, and then all of a sudden these books are stolen, and it kind of upends all the things. And then you start to see how these two timelines are intertwined, but you get to see the New York Public Library in two very different time periods. It's super fun. It's very compelling. This is a book where I specifically remember reading this and telling my boyfriend, you got to go to bed without me because I have to finish this book tonight. It's just so good. All right, what's our next category?
Literary fiction.
Oh, I thought you were going to pick this book for this category.
Of course I picked this. What did you pick for literary fiction, though?
I picked The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett. Britt Bennett is one of my favorite literary fiction writers. I think she's got two books out. She has not written a bad one yet. But this one is, it was a buzzy book from a few years ago. I think it captures what literary fiction is best at, is like deep dives into character and like why people do things. And it's about these two twins. Nope. It's about these twins. Saying two twins would be quadruplets. It's about these twins, and they're black girls, but they're both, one of them is passes as a white girl if mm-hmm. she wants to. And she moves to California and lives her life as a white woman and is terrified of anyone in her family finding out that she's black and her family is black. So she has mm-hmm. no contact with her sister. And her sister stayed in the hometown that they grew up in, like kind of has, you know, held down the fort, living life, you know, authentically as a black woman. And obviously you can't keep up a charade for very long. So you see how their lives start to intertwine, but you really get to see deep into both of their minds. And like, it almost reminds me of Yellowface, which is another great literary fiction to read.
Yeah, I almost recommended that one.
Because it's like you're kind of stressed out for this woman, but and you know that she's doing something kind of despicable, but because the Britt Bennett's such a great writer, you're like, well, I kind of see why she's doing like, mm-hmm. and it's just, it's so compelling, and it's like really the best, like what literary fiction is best. What is your pick?
I also could have easily been my pick. I almost said Yellowface, but I did Unlikely Animals by Annie Hartnett because yes, we both loved it. It's one I feel like. I'm like on this train where I'm just like trying to just hand out this book to everyone because I just really loved it. I think it does that thing. So I think literary fiction can be daunting, you know, because it's like, oh, this is a literary fiction. It's a fancy book.
Serious literature.
And I think this one, even though it is literary fiction, it has magical realism in it. Mm-hmm. It has like a kind of relatable, I mean, in some ways a relatable story about, you know, going home, about family, about the complications of family. But it's not so like... Yeah, it's not so serious, and it's more cute, just like
it's very funny.
It's cute, it's funny, and it's like, and it's also, I mean, just not. It doesn't feel over. You're not like, oh, okay, it takes place in a time period I've never heard of. You know, like it's not an ancient Rome, like whatever kind of book.
Nope, it's very relatable, very real, but also. It's the same thing with Vanishing Half. Is like you get to really into this woman's mind, and mm-hmm. like that's what makes this book like very literary mm-hmm. instead of. Like plot focus, like a lot of like genre stuff is, because there are like a little bit of genre elements, but this is like a squarely literary book.
Yeah. Yeah. What's our next one, Mallory?
Memoir. Mm-hmm. Bria, what do you think is a great entry memoir?
I had a lot for this, but I ended
this
up
was
with
hard.
Page Boy by Elliot Page, because I think it's a great, buzzy, recent book. You can read it. Other people have read it. You can talk about it. And also, it was just like a really... I mean, I don't know if you don't know anything about Elliot Page's career, you can see what it was like.
You probably know who he is.
You probably know who he is. And also, if you've never dipped your toe into celebrity memoir, I thought this was a really great one because it had stuff about him growing up, but it also just had a lot about you know, being in Hollywood. So it's like both that celeb side of things, but also, you know, memoir stuff. You know, it is about like, you know, his childhood home a little bit, you know, so it has like all sorts of memoir-y stuff. I think it's a great entry point if you have never touched on memoir. Yeah. What about you?
I did a non-celebrity memoir, and you know that this memoir is good because it's the only book that I read last year twice.
Oh yeah, I know you love this one.
It's Did You Hear Mammy Died by Seamus O'Reilly. It's about this man when he grew up, him and his 12 or 11 siblings had to suffer through the tragedy of their mother dying, and his father was left with 5,000 children on his own. And it's literally just about growing up with such a huge family in the wake of his mother dying. And that sounds like, oh my God, the saddest fucking shit you've ever read in your life. This book made me cry laughing so many times. There's one particular joke. The first time I listened to this book, I was on the way to a library event at Camarillo Library. My now friend Allison, shout out to Allison. And I almost had to pull off on the side of the road and laugh at how one of these jokes. He's very vulnerable and raw, but also so funny and just so honest. And this is like everything that I think is good about memoirs, like really delving into someone's life and what it means and how relatable or not relatable it can be, while also being just immensely entertaining. And like, again, a mother dying and leaving her 12 children with no mom sounds so sad, but this is one of just the most wonderful, uplifting, hilarious books I've ever read. And again, I listened to it twice. The audiobook is read by the author. It is fucking magnificent. I think the audiobook of Page Boy is read by Elliot Page, yeah. Right? So that's another great thing about memoir, folks, yeah. Is sometimes the author reads it. All right, our next one is nonfiction, which is obviously a huge category, but I feel like so many nonfiction gets such a bad reputation as like a boring science books, history books.
Blah. Yeah, dry, dry, dry. But it's not.
It's not.
Not these days.
Not these days. You can read about what Bria's about to say.
You can read about hot dogs, because my choice is Raw Dog by Jamie Loftus, which is a nonfiction book about the history of the hot dog and its relationship with America and America's relationship with the hot dog. It's a fascinating book that has this sort of like personal element to it. I just thought it was really funny, really interesting. I don't care about hot dogs, and I learned so much, and I can talk to you about hot dogs now. So it was a really good, for me, it was this fun kind of nonfiction that is a micro history, but also has a memoir element to it that I really enjoyed. What do you have? I love this one too.
I think it's interesting that we both picked, you picked a history that's part memoir, and I picked a biography that's part memoir. This was a really buzzy book from a few years ago. People really loved it, including myself. It's Why Fish Don't Exist by Lulu Miller. And it's part biography of this man who is a taxonomist, David Starr Jordan, and also part memoir of her life. But David Starr Jordan was this man, he was obsessed with taxonomy, just wanted to bring order to the world. And that's not how the world works. Mm-hmm. And so Lulu Miller works for NPR. She kind of heard about this guy and she's like, I got to write about this silly man. Like, what a silly thing to do. And then, but as her life started to, she was writing this book, her life, her personal life just started to unravel. And she's like, I kind of understand why this awful man wanted to pin everything down. Mm-hmm. And it's a deep dive into this history of this man, but also like morality and science. And it's like, it's so fucking good. Like, by the end of this book, you're just like a god. Like, your mouth is hanging open. It is magnificent. But again, I like it because, it gives you a little bit of history, it gives you a little bit of science, but also it's all tied into this. Like, she's such a great writer, and it's all tied into her story. And I think that's what is great about nonfiction, is it shows how science and history in the world pertain to your own life. Mm-hmm. God, this book is so fucking good. All right, what is our last category?
Poetry, which I think is tough. Tough to for people to, yes. It can be hard to get into poetry. It can be daunting. Mm-hmm. Not every poem is good. Not every poet is going to be for you.
Yes. I think that's another thing, is that poetry, it's a genre, but it's a category. And there's like, you can have horror poetry. You can have just straight up literary fiction poetry. You can have fantasy poetry. There's so many different types of poetry. And if you can't pick up one book of poetry and be like, well, I don't like poems.
Well, like, and that applies to any of the genres. Like, I mean, I think that's what we're trying to say, is that like, you may have tried romance and you were like, you know, I just don't love, enemies to lovers or whatever. Well, they are not always those kinds of books. You know, there's a lot of ways to enter each of these genres. The language can be different. The writing can be different. The location, whatever mm-hmm. it is that you are drawn to, can be different for everyone.
I chose for my pick my favorite poetry collection, the book that this literally was a gateway book for me because it made me realize that I could really love poetry. It's Night Sky with Exit Wounds by Ocean Vuong. And this book just guts you. Mm-hmm. Like, the poems are so wonderful. Like, and they're big things. They're about romance. They're about grief. They're about family. But, you know, there's a lot of him weaving his own life, like, as a child of immigrants and being gay. And, like, there's a lot of big subjects that he is talking about. But it's, like, they're so beautiful and poignant and just absolutely wonderful. And I was, like, poetry is hard for me because I am an inhaler.
Yeah.
And poetry is not something you inhale.
No, you take your time.
Every word is purposeful. It's like it's the flower arranging of writing, you know, like every word, every sentence, everything is meant to be. And I don't read like that. I'm just like, blah, blah, blah. That's how I inhale things. So this book helped me slow down and be like, all right, I can just read, take 15 minutes with this one sentence.
You can
just sit with this poem. And it really, I loved it so much. So if you think that, if you've always wanted to try poetry but thought, you know, this is a good one, mm-hmm. what are you picking?
The Sun and Her Flowers by Ruby Kaur, which, listen, accessible, little pictures. You know, got little drawings. So
what more could you want?
That's what I like in a poetry book. And there it is. That was made it very accessible for me. And, you know, the nice thing about poetry, you don't like this one poem, it's over very quickly. You get right to the next one. But that one, I think, is very accessible for people.
All right, folks, those are all the major genres that we chose and that we talk about on the show the most. If you want us to do more genres, let us know. But we hope that these books can open a whole new world for you and you can ride on a magic carpet with this book as your new friend. Mm-hmm. If you want us to do more genres, maybe subgenres, go and email us at readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. Now, let's solve a bookish problem from one of our listeners. Sam writes in, "Hi, Brian Mallory. I'm writing you today for two reasons. First, because I need to share this with someone who will understand my pain. And second, I need your advice. I had borrowed The Marvelous Light by Freya Marski from my library through the Libby app, and I was 86% of the way through the book. This morning, I got all cozy in my reading chair and opened up my iPad to find it missing from my shelf. I am heartbroken that I didn't realize that I only had 7 precious days with this book, and I didn't get to finish it before it auto-returned through the app. So now, here I am, at the end of a weeks-long hold list, but I need to know how it ends. I'll likely be able to borrow the second in the series before I'm able to borrow the first again, and on top of that, I can't imagine starting another book while my brain is so invested in the unfinished one. So, I'm considering purchasing the book for myself since I really enjoyed it, but is it worth it for a book I only need to read 12% of? What would you do? I absolutely adore both of you. Thank you for putting out great content all the time. You've helped me out of many sticky reading situations already with all the hot book tips and great suggestions. I'm sure you won't steer me wrong this time either. Bria, what do you think Sam should do?"
Yeah, buy it. Buy the fucking book.
Buy that book.
Look, I do this a lot with library books when I run out of time and I have to flip on my Wi-Fi for whatever the fuck reason. And
the
I'm
worst.
Like, ah, fuck, you know what? I have like, you know, 20% more of this book left. But yeah, buy the book. It's worth it. You already know you like the book. And
yes.
Like, all you're doing is helping that author out. Mm-hmm. So view it that way where it's like, you're already obsessed with this book. You already really know it's an author you want to invest in. It's a book you want to invest in. Like, you may even read this book again. It seems like you liked it so much. So, yeah, I'm going to say the buy the book. Look, if you can't buy the book, for whatever reason, not within your budget, there's probably many a message board or Reddit or review that can tell you that ending.
But it seems like Sam has the ability to buy this book.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, look, 12%, that's worth a lot of money to you. 12%, is that what you said? Yeah.
Yeah, but 12% is like, that's like the, what is, I don't know anything about meat, but that's like the filet mignon.
There you go. And you know? Pay like $20 for a filet mignon.
That's like the meat of the book.
Exactly.
You know, you're paying for the important part.
Yeah. The other advice I'd give you is get back on that holds list ASAP because you may end up with another one of those seven day ones. You know what I mean? Because
that'd be
those
great.
Come up quicker than the other ones. So the 7 day ones will just come up and you're like, oh, I could get this book for 7 days. I rarely do it because I am always like in the middle of something, but mm-hmm. sometimes I will do it if it's a book I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
So get back on that holds list, but Yeah, I've bought many a book with only a very small amount left because I just want to know what happens.
Yeah,
and same. Then you own that book. You may reread that book. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's probably worth it. What do you think? Should stand by the book?
Oh, I completely co-sign everything
buy
you're saying.
The book.
Because I think so much, if you have the budget to buy books, I think so much of our concern about whether you should buy a book or put it on hold at the library is if you're going to like it or not.
Yeah.
If they're like, oh, I've never read this author before, you know, I'm really interested in it, but should I buy this? And I'm speaking from experience. Sometimes I'm like, maybe I should just put it on hold at the library. I don't know if I'm going to love this. But if you're almost done with it and you fucking love it, those are dollars well spent,
yeah.
as far as I'm concerned. Then you own a book that you love. You have started a new author that you love. Again, you're supporting this author. This is like super support because you got it from the library and you bought it.
Yes.
Freya Marski is high-fiving you somewhere. But that's what, like, again, I think that's, especially for me, I used to buy a lot more books than I do. I've gotten a lot better about putting books on hold at the library. And sometimes I'm like, I'll get a book and I'm like, ooh, really glad I didn't buy this. Mm-hmm. And I'll return it. But if you love it, like, it's like buying a food that you know you already like. Or
exactly.
Spending money on a meal at a restaurant you already know you love. Like, there's no down, besides, you know, I am speaking from the perspective of if it's within your budget to buy this. And if you are, like, there's literally no downsides. And again, you can read it again if you want.
Yeah.
So Sam, buy that book.
Buy it.
I feel like we rarely say stuff like that on the show, but
some
in this situation,
yeah,
this
you
is
already,
a definite.
Yeah, you like it. Yeah.
And also, like, nothing is worse than like being in the crux of a book and then having it taken away. And you don't want to wait. I can't imagine being 86% of the way through a book I really liked and having to wait 2 months to finish it. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You want to strike while the iron is hot. Really get in there. All right, Sam, let us know. If you want us to solve your reader problem, you can send it to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. Bria, can you believe this is almost over? The Maximum Fun Drive's almost over.
I can. We've done a lot.
We've done so much stuff. So much stuff.
Yeah, we've done so much fun stuff, but we still have more to unlock, and we really want to unlock that stuff. So go to MaximumFun.org/join to support Reading Glasses for as little as $5 a month. That is, look, one cup of coffee in Los Angeles, it's less than that's a sip of coffee. That is cheaper than any book you're going to buy unless you're at a used bookstore. Or you can upgrade your existing membership. That means a lot to us, too.
If we've helped improve your reading life, this is the best way to show your appreciation and support and literally help us make the show. It really means the world to us and makes all the work we pour into this show every week and all the extra stuff that we do worth it. Right now, go to MaximumFun.org/join to sign up. Help us make the show. Show us you love us. We love you. We cannot thank you enough. That's MaximumFun.org/join. Join.
Join.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported directly by you.